Very good. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning, counsel.
This is the case of Wyndham versus Kroll. As you can see, Justice Miller-Lerman is on WebEx, as you are, and all of the other justices are here in courtroom. Okay. Do you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Good morning, Justice Miller-Lerman, appearing by WebEx. Thanks.
Very good. I'm hearing no further questions. So, Mr. Kennedy, good morning to you.
Good morning. Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Michael S. Kennedy, and I represent the interests of the appellant, Rebecca D. Kroll, in this matter, who's with me in my office today. At this time, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, this is not a complicated case. This was a same-sex couple that entered into a declaratory judgment back in 2012 that had provisions in their declaratory judgment that basically handled their custody and also handled financial arrangements. Outside the standard child support and other expenses that are normally done within a worksheet one, the parties agreed to additional terms, which related to
private. Sorry to interrupt, but you have framed this 2012 action as a declaratory judgment. The parties generally framed it as such. The trial court, both originally and on this modification, characterized the action as more typical of custody and support. How should this court characterize it on appeal?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's two ways to look at this. Part of the problem was this. Our state at that time did not recognize same-sex marriages as it is today. These parties were Nebraska residents. They could not get married in this state. And if they were married, they couldn't get a divorce in the state. So they had to do a workaround.
But we may be having some technical problems, and I'm not sure if Ms. Cooper can hear.
Yeah, but we did not have any audio. Mm-hmm. Let's try it again.
Ms. Cooper,
can we check your audio?
Okay, I just logged back in. I can hear now.
Okay, wonderful.
Sorry.
So, can everybody hear now?
I can, Your Honor.
Yes, very good. Appreciate that. So, Mr. Kennedy, can you kind of go back to the question that was asked of you by Justice Stacey and start from the beginning?
Yes. So the question was related to how should the action be treated? Well, at that time, they could only avail themselves of some type of workaround because they could not get a traditional custody order in the same way. So what they did was they did declaratory judgment. But I think the principles are very similar. And the fact is that they did come up to agreement, a contractual agreement, which is no different than a property settlement agreement. And within that, they had additional terms that are outside of normal worksheet three provisions, such as medical expenses, extracurriculars. Both parties put themselves in a position to pay private school tuition. Both parties agreed the children were going to go to a Catholic school. That's in the 2012 declaratory judgment, Your Honor, that they would pay for the private school tuition. And they also agreed to create a college fund. And what happened with the court did with Judge Coffey was he modified those provisions. So one, under declaratory judgment, no appeal was taken. There's no gross inequity to have it modified. So that should stand. But if you treated it as a traditional marriage, having a property settlement agreement, then I think the same rationale applies. There's no gross inequity. She makes approximately the same amount of money that she made when she entered in the agreement in 2012. And our position is that that should be continued.
Did the agreement provide that it was subject to modification?
No. I looked through that, Your Honor, and I did not see that in there. It was a traditional declaratory judgment trying to look like a custody agreement because they couldn't do one at the time.
If the parenting plan, oh, I'm sorry, Judge.
What significance do you attribute to the absence of language about modification?
Well, I think it should stand because that's their agreement, Your Honor, because it's contractual in nature. It's similar to a property settlement agreement. If we want to take it down that other road as a marriage, dealing with that. But absent that type of information there, I think you have to uphold it.
Under what would be the standard that the trial judge should apply? Gross inequity or good cause or so forth? And what's your rationale? Thank you.
Your Honor, I think that the gross inequity would be the most akin. And you already have that in Carlson v. Carlson. This court has ruled in that area, that absent a fraud or some type of gross inequity. And one, I don't think anyone has made a claim that there's been a fraud. The parties put this together back in 2012, no appeal. But on the gross inequity, the income hasn't changed. So let's take a look at if you're going to modify anything and a district court would modify something, there would have to be some type of material change in circumstances. The only argument that they're making is this, is that because she now has to pay child support, she doesn't have the money to provide the rest. If you look inside the order dated January 6th of 2020 that Judge Coffey signed, in his order, he had attached a child support calculation. You can extrapolate from the testimony, from the record, and from his order that she was already making $5,800 a month, and she had a net through the calculation of $4,215. Your Honor,
I beg your pardon. Is every feature that the trial judge ruled on a support issue?
No.
Any property issues?
There was no property issues, and part of the problem was is this. And if we talk about your gross inequity in that, this case arose because the appellee, unfortunately, assaulted one of the minor children and gave up custody. That's what necessitated having the child support figured up.
So wasn't there a modification of the original declaratory judgment by changing custody and visitation?
Well, Your Honor, I think you got to look at it two different moving pieces. One, and it's no fault of this court, but back in 2012, we didn't have a vehicle to handle their type of custody because it was a same-sex couple. That's why they chose the declaratory judgment.
What about the Latham decision? Why doesn't that provide a framework for custody based on in loco parentis in a same-sex relationship?
Your Honor, I didn't argue this case when I had it before. This is what they put together. And my understanding from talking to my client was their attorneys advised them this was their only method to provide this. At that time, I was not doing these, but as I am doing them now, I think the declaratory judgment route was messy, but there's two principles in this. One is if you treat it like a standard divorce, property settlement agreements are enforceable, and that's in Strunk versus Cromie Strunk, Your Honors. The court upheld those provisions that they were not modified unless there was some type of gross inequity.
Are the two things that are at issue here, which I understand are allocation of school tuition expenses and contributions to children's college savings funds, would those be equivalent in the traditional divorce to property, or would those be a part of child support?
Your Honor, they're not within under the standards of worksheet 3 set out in the court's rules regarding child support. Traditionally, those are areas of athletics, extracurriculars, clothing, those type of shared expenses. Nebraska does not require people to pay for private school tuition. The parties on their own merit in their settlement put themselves in that position by agreeing to that. And furthermore, they also did that with the college savings plan. That's anywhere in the child support regulations. These are financial terms outside it.
In the standard dissolution of marriage, if the parties had entered into agreements to pay things that they would not ordinarily be required to pay by the court, for the benefit of the minor children or the early adult children, wouldn't those be characterized as modifiable child support matters rather than as property division?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I have not seen a case where those specifically were modified in that way based upon the facts of this case. And then let's go into the modification aspect. Let's say we use the Carlson v. Carlson analysis on absence of fraud or some type of gross inequity. The appellee is making the same amount of money as she was previously, and her net worth has increased. The only reason why she's saying she can't afford this is because she's paying child support. But we all know, looking at a child support calculation, whether you have a worksheet 3 or a worksheet 1, you only pay the other party if you don't have the time. The appellee on her own gave up her time, and it's from her own actions that she is paying child support. But if those kids were living with her today, Your Honors, she would still be having those costs and they would be internalized to her. But because the kids aren't living with her, Ms. Kroll is being paid child support. And if you go through the calculation and see what her net is after that time, Your Honors, she has over $4,200 available a month. She is not in poverty.
Counsel, if we decide that material change in circumstances is the correct standard to apply when parties are seeking modification of a custody and support order such as this, what is your best argument that there has not been a material change in circumstances here?
Well, first, let's look at the income. That would be the first area court would look at. If you go through the record, her income has not substantially changed. So that would be the first part of it. Two, it are the parts that she's seeking to modify within child support guidelines, worksheet 1, worksheet 3, like extracurriculars or medical expenses. That's not what we appealed, Your Honor. We appealed things outside the traditional worksheet 3 expenses, as the college fund and also with the tuition.
Isn't it true that in the dissolution and paternity context, we have had cases where we expressly disavowed the position that you're making today, that matters pertaining to educational expenses, extracurriculars, should be treated as part of the property support settlement instead of more akin to child support?
Correct. And that's why, if you use that analysis,
it's in this context.
And I'm sorry, I didn't hear there was a garble. Could you repeat the question?
Why shouldn't we follow that same jurisprudence in the context of an in loco parentis custody situation?
You could apply that standard to this, Your Honor. I'm not saying you can't. The problem is that what they entered into was a declaratory judgment. So they made a contract between each other. And like I said, that was on their own merits. That's what they did.
A declaratory judgment action isn't designed to allow people to make a contract between one another. A declaratory judgment action by statute is intended to declare the rights and liabilities of the parties with respect to certain things. Isn't that right?
Correct.
Does this situation factually fit within our declaratory judgment statutes?
Well, I don't believe so initially. This is not the vehicle I would have done it as, but the problem is that they did enter into the agreement, and I believe it is contractual in nature. They didn't appeal it. This is what they both bargained for and asked for, and this was not done at a trial. So this is their contract. They both signed that order, Your Honor. Your Honor, I see my time is up. May I make a closing?
You may wrap it up, yes.
Yes. Your Honors, I feel on these two issues here that Ms. Kroll is entitled to the relief that she requested. There's no material changes, circumstances. There is no fraud. And by the way, Your Honors, the situation only occurred through the fault of the appellee for abusing her child and giving up custody. Therefore, relief should not be granted.
Thank you very much. Ms. Cooper, good morning to you.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. If I can just start, may it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Jamie Cooper, and I am with the law offices of Johnson & Peckney, And I am here representing the appellee, Alicia Windham, in this case. I'm here today to ask the court to affirm the district court's order of modification and finding that there was a material change in circumstances to not only change the custody child support, but also the party's obligations for private school tuition and college savings plan. I understand that it's the appellant's argument that the court erred in finding this modification and that the appellant is asking the court to restore the terms of declaratory judgment. I first want to talk about just the declaratory judgment. I think in this case, it's just a word. I don't know, and as Mr. Kennedy explained, neither one of us were the attorneys for the parties previously, but this is in fact, and in all intents and purposes, a child custody order. It deals with custody of the children, child support, division of expenses. It includes a parenting plan. There's nothing in this order that says it's a divorce. It doesn't end the party's relationship. It doesn't deal with any of the party's personal property or division of that same. And so I do believe that this case is modifiable by showing that there's a change in circumstances. If we look at the terms of the high school tuition first, when you look in the declaratory judgment, that there's a section that says, you know, the parties shall split extracurricular sports, tuition, etc. And pursuant to Nebraska Code, Nebraska Court Rule 4212, when there is a joint custody arrangement, as there was in this case, those expenses are allocated amongst the parties. When that changes, or if that changes in a modification, those expenses can be allocated to just to one party, which is generally the case when one party has sole physical custody. And in this case, the parties, upon agreement and a temporary order, agreed that the appellant would have primary physical custody of both minor children. I also want to point out, and I know it's the appellant's argument that this is a property settlement agreement. So if we look at the case law with regards to property settlement agreements, the courts say the parties can modify property settlement agreements upon agreement of the parties, or if we can show some sort of fraud or gross inequity. And I believe in this case, we did both of those things. First, the parties amongst themselves in the February 2018 order modified the terms of the provision of the division of school tuition. So while at the beginning of the case or in the declaratory judgment, the parties said that they would split that expense 50-50, in the temporary order, a stipulated order that was agreed upon the parties, they did change that. And I believe that leaves the door open to the court to make further modifications as it sees fit. I believe the purpose of changing that percentage for the parties in that temporary order was because my client is now paying child support to the appellant. She's incurring expenses that she didn't have to pay out directly to the appellant previously. And so the amount of income that she's bringing in, or the net money that she has every month to spend on the children, is now lowered. And so I think it's important to see that the parties did amongst themselves agree to change that provision. With regards to the argument of gross inequity, the testimony at trial was that my client net income is about $4,400 a month. In addition, including the child support that she was ordered to pay, which was $1,050 a month, her expenses per month were $5,600. So over the amount of money that she's bringing in, and she cannot pay on top of that high school tuition, which at that time, the parties testified, or the appellant testified, she believed that the tuition for one minor child was going to be almost $1,100, not knowing whether or not he was going to get any sort of scholarship or work study. And then the other minor child was $3,000 a month, but would $3,000 a year, but would increase to $10,000 a year when that child also entered high school. So essentially, we now have a position where my client, if she's forced to pay 50% of the expenses, has to pay almost $1,100 a month in child support. And then there's $10,000 a year in additional funds that she has to pay for college tuition. And I believe the court was accurate in lowering this amount. The court didn't absolve her of all of her responsibilities. It lowered the amount from the 40% that the parties agreed to, a 33 1/3% that she would have to contribute. So she's still going to struggle financially. She still has some responsibilities, but it makes it more equitable in that sense.
What is the authority, do you think, for either modification as for good cause or something else as distinguished from gross inequity? What do you think the authority is for either of those standards?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but I believe that in this case,
what is the standard that should be applied, and what is the source of that standard?
I believe in this case, the standard should be a material change in circumstances, because the nature of the declaratory judgment was a child custody order. It wasn't a divorce decree. It wasn't a property settlement agreement.
Is that the same standard this court applied in 2017 in Wild v. Wild? A material change in circumstances standard?
Your Honor, I'm not sure. I don't have that case law in front of me.
If it is, assuming that it is, would that be significant to us in this case?
I believe so. I believe that when we have a significant change in circumstance, and I don't believe that there's an argument that the parties changed custody over from one party to another, and generally that's all that is needed to show that there's a change. Because then that invokes a difference in child support, a division that's different in the allocations of extracurricular and other expenses.
Do you think our Carlson opinion is relevant to this analysis, especially with respect to college savings?
I do think it's relevant. I think the difference in Carlson and this case is in Carlson, I don't believe that there was a material change in circumstance in that case. So I know that he argued, I don't want to pay these, I think it was post-majority child support because the language wasn't clear. But there wasn't any argument of why there was a change in circumstances or a change in income or that custody had ever changed. I know that the court did look and say, you know, he also didn't argue a gross inequity or fraud of any sort. And that's why the court didn't change his order to pay these things. And in this case, we did. In this case, my client provided her financial information, her net worth, her expenses. And I also think it's important that the parties both testified that when they entered into this declaratory judgment, they had no idea how much these expenses were going to cost in the future. They didn't know that the tuition for the minor children when they reached the age of high school was going to be $10,000. They also testified that they didn't anticipate ever changing the custody arrangement, or that one person would have to pay the child support to the other person for a full child support amount, or that any of these provisions would ever change. I think it's also important, to go back to what the parties testified about, and I believe that Mr. Kennedy had also mentioned the reason that the change came about. You know, my client, there was an issue, there was a situation that happened. My client addressed that situation. She's done what she needed to do to rehabilitate herself, and she's made strides. You can see throughout the pleadings that the parties have engaged in therapy and done whatever they needed to do to amend my party's relationship with the minor children. I don't think this is a case where my client just brought this among herself. She didn't do anything to avoid child support or to avoid her responsibilities as a parent altogether. I think that the situation was unfortunate, but we're in a position right now where we need to make sure that there isn't gross inequity, that we see that there is a change in circumstances. And I think we should treat this case as a child custody case where the provisions contained therein are modifiable I believe that the court was correct in modifying the provisions of tuition and child savings or college savings plan. Again, it didn't absolve my client of all responsibilities. It just lowered the amount and increased her child support amount significantly. I believe that based on the facts and the of this case, that the court was correct in its order, and I'd ask the court to affirm the same.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. So that concludes oral arguments in this case, Wyndham versus Kroll. Counsel, again, thank you very much for participating by WebEx, and we will go on to the next case of the day, which is Fuelbirth versus Heartland Heating and Air, which also is a WebEx case. Thanks, counsel.